Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. It's April. The first few months of life under the current American administration has rippled around the globe. This month at the Boomer Woman's podcast started to come together by accident, but a theme quickly emerged that I decided to take advantage of. Today I speak with Mel Stubbs, a financial planner slash advisor focusing on retirement planning with American federal employees. If you're one of those, he shares so much info that is probably vital for you to know right now, no matter what age you are. Next week, I'll have a similar conversation with a Canadian retirement slash financial planner. Week three is a conversation with a financial therapist. We all have stories around money. Are we spenders, savers, have nasty thoughts about people with money? Dealing with that is a major step to having a healthy relationship with our finances. Finally, I wrap April with a conversation with a succession planner. I don't think I've ever had a theme month before, but this was all so timely. Today, talking with Mel, I do put him on the spot several times with political questions we can't answer, so please overlook my misdemeanors. I thought I was acquainted with part of the U.S. system, but I think, now, that I really only knew the names and acronyms of the U.S. system. I can't count how many times I say, okay, during this conversation. I think it was my way of acknowledging Mel's information while I tried to process it. And don't, for a second, think this is going to be a dry topic. Mel is one funny guy. I'm just sorry I don't have video footage of him dancing on my podcast. Listen now. Here we are, April already. It's been a crazy world this year. Job security is tenuous if you live in North America, and that is not to exclude Europe or other areas of the world. I'm just not as acquainted with those areas. When job security is threatened, or if jobs are actually lost, one of the great fears, especially for folk over 50, is what retirement might look like, or if they'll ever even be able to retire. Today I'm speaking with an American financial planner who specializes in helping federal employees plan for retirement. Next week, my guest is a Canadian retirement planner who will talk to us about retirement planning here. Before the month ends, my guest will be a financial therapist. I'd never heard of that role, but after doing some research, I think there's a lot that we could benefit from by talking to a therapist who specializes in money talk and our money stories. Today, I have a few questions for Mel, but I think I'm just going to let him talk. Mel Stubbs, welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey. Although, as I put that in my notes, it occurred to me that right now, some of them might not be embracing that journey. They might be hanging on for dear life. Welcome, though.
Glad to be here.
So, are you in uncharted territory right now? Does your rule book still work, or are you thinking on your feet?
All still works, especially since we deal with a lot of federal employees. I don't know if you've been keeping up, but there's lots of federal employees getting allowed to go work somewhere else, so to speak. So retirement is even more on the forefront for lots of people. So we are glad that we're able to help when needed.
Okay. I will ask about the Social Security Ponzi scheme shortly. But what's the first thing you'd say to an American listener who has either lost their job or they're scared poopless that it's imminent?
Yeah. Lots of the people we are talking to, when they call with the same type of question, is I think I'm going to get RIFed. That's the reduction in force is how they are talking about. We're trying to find out, are you ready to retire? Are you able to retire? Or like, we got to go find another job in the meantime. And so, you know, the first question, and it's actually the first of the 10 decisions, is when is the right time to retire? And making sure you have enough money. We have a little squeezy toy thing here as people get nervous that says enough. And so we got to make sure you have enough. If you don't have enough, you can get nervous and squeeze it. But finding out if they have enough is kind of the first step. And then if they are emotionally ready, do they want to retire or do they need to find other employment?
So if... Is it riffing? Is that what you called it?
Riff, R-I-F, reduction in force.
How many people are phoning you saying, okay, this is what's happening? And how many of you are, or how many people are phoning you, are contacting you, and they are next door to panic?
Oh, probably half and half. I mean, for some people, if you're already thinking of retiring, you know, this is, you know, we don't know how it's going to work out yet, but it might work out where they can somewhat like go ahead and like go home, start working. You get paid for like 8 or 9 more months and then retire. Like it's worked out well for some people. Other people, you know, not so much. And a lot of it probably depends on their political persuasion. And if you like the current administration, you know, hey, I'll make this work. And if you don't, you know, it's awful. But I think it's moved the timeline up for lots of people where that, you know, I wasn't planning on retiring for several years. I wasn't paying attention that much now. Now suddenly it's important. Can you please help me figure out what I'm supposed to do?
It's really hard not to sound political. But you mentioned getting paid out for 8 or 9 months. And I follow the news. I listen to American podcasts. Will that happen? Because I guess my curiosity is, if you're going to pay somebody for 8 or 9 months, why not keep them on the job?
I just work here. I don't make the rules.
Okay.
It sounds, I mean, it sounds like that's why, you know, for some clients we have that, like, I was kind of going to retire in December, so I'll kind of quit now and get paid till September, and it, like, it works out great.
Yeah.
Now, the hope is that they actually do what they say they're going to do, and they are going to, you know, pay the people out. Evidently, I'm also finding out in federal world, like, it's really hard to get fired. I think I've only known one person to ever get fired. So it's not the same maybe like in private industry where like, hey, this has happened, sorry, but, you know, next week y'all are all fired. It evidently does not work that way. And so it is a process to reduce the force, evidently.
Yeah. Okay. And as I said, I'm not trying to get political. It's just sometimes the thoughts go through. Now, under normal circumstances, you say there's 10 decisions you have to make at retirement. Can you talk to us about a few of those?
Sure. Run down the list. The when to retire decision. And probably 8 of these decisions apply to everybody. So even though we just wrote a book on the 10 decisions, it is kind of federally focused, but 8 of them kind of work for everybody. There's the when to retire decision. The survivor benefit decision is, you know, if you have a pension and you die, what do you leave to your spouse? That might be federally focused. The life insurance that's included with your work, I guess to kind of make this more broadly, what do you do with that? Because, you know, when you quit, what happens to it? You know, deciding there, what are you doing with the federal call it TSP, the Thrift Savings Plan. Other people, at least in America, would be your 401k, but like the money you have saved up kind of at your job, what do you do with that? Tax planning, the Social Security decision, what age do you want to turn that on? Long-term care decision, like, do you just have enough money to pay for that? Do you need to get something for that? Medicare is probably one that's specific to feds. Most people in our country, like, if you're 65, you've got to sign up for it. The work with an advisor, should you work with an advisor, that decision, and then what to do in retirement. Of those, the one that's probably the one that's nearest and dearest to my heart is the tax planning, is the figuring out, most people, their money is saved up in a tax deferred account where I'm going to pay taxes later. And it's like, you know, I got paid, I didn't take my paycheck. Instead, I said, put that in that account and it's going to grow and I'm going to pay taxes later. Everybody's on board with that piece of it until later you take the money out and you're like, what do you mean I got to pay taxes on this? Like at my paycheck, like tax bracket level. At least in America, we've got capital gains, which is a certain kind of tax, and then we've got kind of your tax bracket. It's at the tax bracket. Like, oh, that's not fair. Well, it was your paycheck that you postponed, and it grew a whole bunch, hopefully. But, you know, you pay taxes when you take the distribution, whenever that is. And, like, you know, 10 years from now, what will the tax rate be? I don't know. And that's where doing some of that planning of, we know what today's rates are. Can we shift some of the money, go ahead and pay the tax, and get it into a tax-free account so that from here on out, there are no more taxes. It can say, I mean, we just were working with somebody that saved them $1 million. If they live to age 94, it should save them $1 million in taxes by just being proactive about it. So that's my favorite decision.
Okay. I'm going to show off. I'm Canadian, so I'm acquainted with some of your U.S. planning or the retirement planning, but So, Social Security, is that so 401k is your employee paid into? Social
As
Security is
you
what you get.
contribute, and usually the company will match you something. It's invested in something, and hopefully it's grown over time. You retire, you got $500,000, something like that.
Okay, we have something similar here. Social Security is your government
At
top up
age
or
62, somewhere between 62 and 70, you can turn it on. The amount will be based on when you turn it on, and
okay.
you get paid for life.
All righty. What's a Roth?
A Roth, I think it was a senator somewhere that did the bill and it got approved, so it's somebody's last name. But a Roth is a retirement account that you go ahead and pay the tax, then you put the money in after tax, all the growth tax-free.
Okay. Now you said it's I've got a little note here about the TSP because I did see that on your website. You did mention that. Now, what is that one again? Because I hadn't heard of that one.
The TSP is Thrift Savings Plan. That is the 401k for the federal government.
Okay.
So regular, and I guess 401k is like a tax code, it's section 401k, but it's the out of my paycheck, please take some money. If you're a federal government, they call it TSP. If you're private business, it's 401k. I think if you're like work for the like a state, it's like a 403b. There's different names, but it is the take it from my paycheck. Save money for retirement.
Okay, so three of those I will be taxed when you draw on them. Is that correct?
Anything that I guess there's the word traditional means I'm getting a deduct. I get to lower my income today by putting the money in, but I will pay taxes later. And Roth is I'm going to go ahead and pay the tax now, then put the money in, and I won't pay taxes later. Those are kind of the two choices. In our world here, we've got traditional and Roth through the company. We've got traditional and Roth like through yourself, like you can have your own. We would call it an IRA, an individual retirement account, and you can have traditional or Roth there too.
Okay, I'm just trying to set the scene here because now I want you to tell us what we do. For those people who deferred the taxes now, what do they do now that they are about to draw on those accounts but want to reduce the tax hit, shall we say?
Yeah, and one of the benefits, I guess, when we work with federal employees, they're getting a pension. Most of the just the regular companies in America, they did away with pensions. They would rather contribute a little bit to your money and you deal with it yourself. But in pension world, they're getting a check. They're going to get a Social Security check, where a lot of times most of their living expenses are kind of paid for. So they have a bunch of money, but they're not really spending it, and so it starts multiplying. It grows. In America, that we've got what's called a required minimum distribution, where depending on the age you were born, you'll either be 72, 73, or 75, you have to start taking money out, even if you don't need it, and it's taxable. And so we have people that when you show up at 75 and they got to take out like $100,000 a year, like have to, it's taxable. Suddenly, like my tax bracket was looking pretty good for several years, and now what? This is awful. What do I do now? Well, you might have done waited too long now. Like this is where we could have proactively planned some of this if we can catch people earlier.
Okay, so the big tip here is go see Mel at age 55. Is that correct?
I like it. I like your style. The imagine you're at the top of a cliff, people are running towards the cliff, and you're like, don't go this way. We're trying to tell the younger people, don't go this way. Now, every once in a while, we find people, they're at the bottom of the cliff, and now we're doing ambulance service at the bottom of the cliff instead of just holding up the sign at the top of the cliff. And so we got to do both. Just depending on who we're talking to, we may have to do both.
Holy crow. Do you have any words of wisdom for those people who are panicking?
I mean, if you have enough, it gives you options. I mean, I remember being little, both my parents were in education. I guess I like teaching this stuff, but I did not want to be in education. Hey, the better grades you have more options. More options, that's better. And so if you have more money, you have options to, if you lose your job, you can retire or not retire, that type thing. I mean, if you don't have enough, I guess you got to keep working. So then our goal would be to help you find something that you love to do, that you're passionate about, that like you'd kind of do anyway. That would be amazing. But if you have enough, then you get to decide. You know, hopefully you've been building success. Like your whole career, you've been working on success and you've attained it. Now it's like, what do you want to do that's significant? And if it's your job, keep going. But if it's not and you want to do something else, it'd be great to do something you feel is significant, regardless of how much money you might make. You're doing it for the satisfaction. That would be good.
I got a couple of questions, but I'm just going to stay on this moving your money out of. For those people who don't need the money, they're suddenly finding they have to start drawing that mm-hmm. money out. If they decide to go the route of a philanthropist, how does that balance out at all, or just sort of take a little bit of a sting out?
In our world, I guess, yes, let me answer one thing and then I'll get to that. So the problem is you take the money out, you got to pay taxes.
Okay.
And then you have to go put it in just a regular old account that's taxed every year. So that's no good. So that's the problem is, you know, if we can take the money and move it into a Roth account or a tax-free account, then you're not taxed anymore. But you're forced to take the money out, I got to pay taxes, and now I have to go put it in this regular old account, which now is taxed all the time, so it's kind of doubly bad. But if you want to give away money, some of the planning, we help people shift money to tax-free, but if they are charitably minded, you'd want to hold some of it back in a traditional account. That is, I haven't paid taxes yet. And when you get to 70 and a half, they have what's called a qualified charitable distribution, where you can give money directly from your IRA, your individual retirement account, straight to a charity, and it's not taxed. I think it's like an above-the-line exclusion is the fancy word, but basically you get to deduct it. And so you can do up to $100,000. You can give it away. It's tax deductible. The key thing is it has to go straight from your individual retirement account to them. It can't be your employer plan. Like you need to get the employer money to yourself in an individual account. You can give it directly to them, and you don't pay tax. They don't pay tax, and you know, a little bit of a benefit for doing it.
Now, I know I'm probably sounding like a Canadian, in other words, someone who's not really acquainted with your system. But is this, are all these possibilities common knowledge, or is that part of what you do when someone comes to you is educate them?
Yes, we educate. It seems like in America, like the tax code, could it be simpler? Yes. Would we need accountants if it was too simple? Maybe not. So I don't know if they make stuff overly complicated. I don't know why they do it. But yes, as far as there's, in our world, there's a 59 and a half age special thing. There's a 70 and a half, 72, 73, 75. So yes, there's lots of rules that the average person is probably not really paying attention to. And there are some benefits that if you're not aware of it, you don't get to take advantage of it. And that's one of the things of the work with an advisor decision, should you or should you not. Some of the stuff is, I mean, you're probably missing out on something if you're doing it yourself because you just don't know. And it's okay that you don't know, but you might be missing out.
Yeah, and I've just gone through that with turning the age that I am, and my financial planner said, okay, we've got to be proactive. And she started doing things that I'm going like, I wouldn't even have known. I wish everybody could see my face right now. I wouldn't even have known that existed. So thank goodness for my financial planner / advisor.
And see, it's hard to explain that when somebody is like, it's a prospect. We're working, you know, doing some work for them to see if it's a good fit. And they'll say like, well, like, what do I get for the fee I pay you? And you can list off a few things, but some stuff is like something is going to come up in your life and you're going to ask a question. We're going to have an amazing answer that saves you money. I don't know what that thing is yet, but something will come up. You know, whether you inherit money, we'll help you. Like you can inherit money and receive it wrongly and pay taxes that you wouldn't have had to pay. You know, there's all kind of loopholes, but just scenarios come up where like, oh yeah, this is clearly the right decision and you wouldn't have known it, but it's hard to explain that in the beginning of how somebody might use our services. But that is definitely something of there's things that you're not aware of that we are that we can be helpful with.
Well, and I just want to add for the listeners out there is that I go to bed at night and I go fast asleep because I know that my advisor has got my back.
Yes.
So, you know, that right there is probably worth at least a good chunk of your any fees that are.
I have a CPA does my taxes each year. Could I do them myself? Yes, I wouldn't enjoy it. My wife majored in accounting. I'm sure she could do it. I'm just counting on he is finding me some deduct. He has got to be saving me enough money, at least what I'm paying him. And then I have the peace of mind. I'm just he's gonna keep me honest. He's gonna do the stuff. I am willing to delegate that, and I'm okay with it.
So just on that note, I know here in Canada that when my tax accountant files, I also sign a form saying if you, the government, have any questions, go to the tax accountant, not me, because that person knows what's going on. Is it similar in the States or not? Or,
No, I think a year ago I got the lovely letter from the IRS saying that we think you did something wrong, and it came to me, and I had to go to the accountant to show him, and we had not done something wrong, so he gave me the proof that you send back, and then you got the letter like, so sorry, everything's great. And so no, I know from firsthand the correspondence comes to you yourself, and you have to go figure it out.
okay. Every time something differs, I think maybe I better double check that. So if one of our listeners is just mid to late 50s, and they've gotten RIFT, I'm going to start talking your language.
Hey.
Can they double dip? So stay on and collect that 8 to 9 months worth of whatever, and then, but in the
Absolutely.
meantime, next month have found another job.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
That is my understanding that they can. I've talked to some people that are trying to do it. They've been sent home where I mean, they're still quote working, but they've just been sent home. And they are actively looking. So if they find something, yes.
Okay. Now that you talked briefly about, and I'm not going to remember what you said, but it was, if it's a couple and one party dies, right now, many older employees are married and they want to make sure that their spouses are taken care of if they get hit by the proverbial bus. How do you make sure all that happens?
Yeah, so one of the things when we are working with somebody, we build a financial plan for them. We don't charge for it. We kind of use it as a way of let's do a little work for you, kind of show you what it looks like to work with a planner, because most people we're talking to have never done that. It gives them an idea of what the relationship might look like and kind of gives them a preview. And we will go over a scenario of like you and your spouse, you live into your 90s, will y'all have enough? And we go over that. The second scenario is we are usually whoever the federal employee is, we're killing them off. Sounds awful. Someone is passing early, and we got to make sure the spouse is going to be okay. And so whoever has the pension, like whoever hurts the plan the most by dying, we have that person die and make sure the remaining person has enough so they can live into their 90s. And if it doesn't work, then we got to find out how to fix it, whether it's life insurance, whether it's you can't retire yet, you need to keep working, but somehow we need to know it's going to work. And that's, definitely something that for everyone to have peace of mind, we need to make sure the spouse is okay. Another thing that's bad about it is when, like, in our country, you got married filing jointly tax brackets
Okay.
and you got single tax brackets. Most of the time, the numbers are just halved, but usually the single bracket is not as advantageous as the married bracket. And so, like we talked about earlier, you get to a certain age, you have to take money out and it's taxable. When one of you dies, the remaining person still has to take the money out, but now you're on the single tax bracket, which is worse. And so taxes might get worse for lots of reasons, but they might get worse because you get bumped down to the single bracket. And all the more reason to let's plan in advance and hopefully take care of most of it before we ever get there.
What is the difference between a planner and an advisor?
I don't know what the technical difference is. I will tell you what, I guess, kind of what we do compared to some people, or some people think that, an advisor, a planner, all they do is help me with my investment. They help me pick the exact investment I'm going to be in, and that's it. All we talk about is the returns. Should I get another investment? That's it. You know, we are doing more, I guess the fancy word is holistic planning. In our world, you know, I guess we just wrote the book on federal retirement. You know, we know a lot about federal stuff. It is complicated enough that if you are Fed, I think it's helpful to work with somebody that understands that. There's, you know, doing the planning, making sure that somebody's going to have enough, making sure the spouse will have enough. And then, like, the third scenario we do in the planning is the tax planning of here's what your situation looks like if we don't do any tax planning. Here's what it looks like if we does. Most of the time, don't it look better? But, you know, not every time, but, you know, some of that type stuff. If the survivor benefit does not work, like if one spouse dies and the remaining spouse is not looking good, then we can jump in with, like, maybe you need life insurance. Maybe we got to do something there to fix it. And at least in America, a lot of our life insurance policies have long-term care benefits kind of built into them, where you can access the death benefit early to pay for long-term care. So it's either there for your death benefit or there for long-term care, kind of either one. And so if that's a need, you know, we can figure that out. And so we're helping with more than just the investment. And that's kind of what I view the difference to be.
Okay. So you can claim from your death benefit to help with long-term care?
Yes. The fancy word, they call it a chronic illness rider. So if you get a letter from a doctor saying you can't do 2 of the 6 daily functions, and that's, you know, get up, move yourself, go to the bath, you know, that type of stuff, which if you have a fancy, like, long-term care policy, it's the same thing. You got to get a doctor to say, I can't do 2 of the 6 daily functions. And, you know, then they will, there's certain math involved. At least the company we use, they'll advance 24% of the death benefit for 4 straight years, which will leave just a little bit of death benefit there, which we have to do, because if they give you all the money and you hadn't died yet, now the IRS wants to come in and say, hey, this was something taxable. So they have to leave a little bit of money back. So, it, you know, when somebody dies, they pay out life insurance. But, you know, they're giving you money up front. And so the fancy word for that is indemnity. So most regular long-term care policies, you need to pay for it, and you get a receipt, and you got to turn it in, get repaid. Where with the life insurance stuff, they you know, here's your $25,000 for this year. You're now a cash buyer. You go buy what you want to buy. And then next year, you got to get another letter from a doctor saying you still qualify and you'll get next year's payment. And so we just find it better that if you get the long-term care policy and you die peacefully in your sleep, never having used it, you paid all that money, you didn't get anything. At least with this, like, you're really buying the death benefit. So if you never need it, somebody's going to get it when you die, but if you do need it, it's available. And so that's definitely something we talk to people if that's a concern of theirs.
I guess I'm sort of trying to compare a little bit as well, so I hope my question doesn't sound too clumsy. For example, we have a retirement savings plan up here, and if you decide to buy a house, you can borrow against it. And obviously, you know, if someone's just lost their job, they're not looking at buying a house tomorrow. But for any of the other things that happen in life, are there any other accounts that they can even borrow from, or does it all get taxed? Okay.
If they are working and they have money at their job, like a 401k, TSP, something like that, you can borrow from that. In an IRA, an individual retirement account, you cannot borrow. If you need money, you got to take it out. So there's different, you know, amounts you can take. You've got certain, you know, time you've got to pay it back. If you don't pay it back, then they might count it as a distribution, and that's taxable. But as long as you pay it back, you can. So as long as you're working and you have a 401k, IRA, you got money there, you can borrow for things like that.
Okay. We talked about spouses. A lot of people, once the kids are sort of leaving the nest, they start thinking about, what can I leave my kids? What sort of things do you look at if that is important to a client? Like, some clients will say, no, my kids are fine, I'm just going to spend it. Yes. But if it's really important, what sort of things do you look at for that?
Yeah, so it seems like it's half and half. Half the people, like, really care about it. Half of them are like, I don't care if they get nothing. And that's fine. But assuming they want to, you know, the different types of accounts they hold, there's certain taxation placed on it. And so, like, at death, the Roth account, the tax-free account, would go to whoever, also tax-free. So that's good. The account that you're deferring taxes, if you die and leave it to them, like, now they got to pay the tax. So sometimes there's some planning in there of, like, let's say it's mom and dad and children. Like, mom and dad, what tax bracket are you in? Children, what tax bracket are you in? If we're going to, like, move this to tax-free, does it make sense for, like, mom and dad to go ahead and do it? Or do you leave it to the kids and they can do it? Sometimes there's who's going to pay the least in taxes? Let's do that. Some accounts that I call, like, a taxable account, just a regular brokerage account, not retirement money. You know, in our country, we have what's called a step-up in basis. So when somebody dies, it's kind of like all the gains just kind of go away and you start over, and somebody can inherit it without having to pay any gains. And that, you know, so figuring out the money you have, if the goal is to leave it to them, getting the money set up correctly. Some people get life insurance. Like, some people that have enough money, like, they have more than enough, and they have so much, they actually have money they could buy life insurance if they wanted to, just to leave even more money. And in our country, tax-free, you know, a death benefit from life insurance is tax-free. So there are ways to leave more if that's the goal. I'm just finding for at least half, maybe more, that's not much of a goal. I don't know. The kids must have offended them too much. And I've got teenagers, or I've had teenagers, and now I've got five-year-olds. I understand the offending that kids can do.
I just love the bumper sticker on the back of the big, huge motorhome saying, I'm spending my kids' inheritance. No vengeance, just I'm going to enjoy my life. I worked for it.
Yes.
I know several Canadians that have, and again, it's going to sound political, and I'm sorry. They worked a chunk of their career in the U.S., which means they should be able to draw from Social Security. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about that scenario?
I don't. Okay. I just talked with somebody yesterday that I guess lived in Germany, where they've like got some German credit and some American credit. We were quickly looking up, and I mean, somehow like some taxes get paid here, some there. I do not know enough to speak intelligently on that.
It was just the
when worst. We deal with mainly federal employees, like they mainly are living here. Now some of them retire and move somewhere else, but we don't run into that a lot.
Capital gains. I mean, we've got capital gains too, but what do you pay capital gains on? I mean, I don't know anything. What do you pay capital gains on?
Yeah, so, I mean, let's say you just open up, I call it just a regular old account, so it's not a retirement account, and you buy, you know, Apple stock, and it, you know, doubles in price over 5 years, and then you sell it. Whatever you gained, you've got to pay long-term capital gains rates. The rates are either 0%, 15%, or 20%, and it depends on what tax bracket kind of income rate you're at determines the capital gains rate. It's a better rate. So capital gains is at a lower rate. If you die with a bunch of capital gains, the next person inherits it and all those gains kind of go away. And now they inherit the money and they don't have to pay taxes on it. So that, I'm sure, gets abused, or, you know, rich people maybe benefit from that more than poor people do, but that's the way the rules are. It happens some with houses where, you know, you buy a house, you live in it for 30 years, you sell it. I think right now, if you're married, the first $500,000 of gain is not taxed, but above that would be subject to capital gains.
So that's even on your primary residence?
On your primary residence, you got to live there for at least 2 years. You know, single, it's $250,000, married, $500,000. So, I mean, if you make more than $500,000, the amount above that is subject to capital gains.
Okay. I'm thinking that I'm almost positive that you don't pay capital gains on your primary residence here, but if you had a secondary residence, so a summer cottage, that sort of thing, right, that would be hit for capital gains.
And I guess here you would not have that $500,000 exclusion. It would, you know, if you made a gain, you pay taxes on it.
Okay.
And I guess Bitcoin, all the stuff. You buy something, you sell it for more, IRS wants their cut.
So Bitcoin as well?
Yes, which is, I'm sure, you know, my accountant you know, I'm turning my tax stuff in. Like, have you done any Bitcoin stuff? If so, I need to know it and turn it in. So I don't know how they're going to be tracking all of that stuff, because I think the whole appeal of Bitcoin is maybe it's not all trackable. But yes, if there's a gain, you're supposed to pay taxes on.
This is like so complicated.
Hey, it's called job security, Agnes. Job security.
No, I'm just so impressed. Can we just go there for a second? Like you have got so much knowledge between your ears. What did you have to do to...
I'm just going to go ahead and say that. There was some crackling here. I need you to say that again. No, I'm just kidding.
You're brilliant, Mel. Tell us how you got that way.
I'm going to have to cut that out and use that for my personal gain. Okay. Carry on. Sorry.
No, okay. What's your background? What's your education?
Finance major. And always wanted to be a stockbroker. Always wanted to have a beeper back in the day. Like, everybody had a beeper. I wanted a beeper and a briefcase. And now, by the time I got there, I don't really use briefcases, and beepers are not a thing. So I went finance to doing mortgages, you know, helping people refinance houses, to the real estate business, like rental houses. And now have landed, I think I'm year 12 of financial, we call it a financial advisor. Instead of just an advisor, it's about advice. So you're an advisor.
Okay. What, if someone's looking for a financial planner / advisor / advisor, what should they look for? Like, what's the I won't say the bare minimum, because we want more than the bare minimum, but what sort of credentials should a person have if you're shopping around?
Yes. And this, you know, comes from our section on what to look for when you look for an advisor. Somebody needs to be a good communicator. I mean, like, we've got to explain things to people so they can understand it and make a decision. So, like, they got to be able to communicate well. Their recommendations need to be good. That's kind of obvious, but recommendations need to be good. The subject matter expert, if you have something, I don't say unusual, but I mean, there's people that specializes in, like, dentists. At the end of their career, they want to sell their dentistry and move on. Like, there's people that specialize in that. We are federal employees. We also do a lot of work with, Christians, and, like, what's the Bible say about money, and kingdom advisor type of stuff. But, you know, find somebody that does what you need all the time. Just a general problem. I just help a little bit of everybody. I would like somebody that helps, like, my specific problem, like, kind of all the time is what I would like. I've heard some other people say, I know cookie cutter has a bad connotation. Like, I don't want somebody that's going to do a cookie cutter plan for me. Like, yes, but what if somebody worked with somebody just like you so often that, like, the cookie cutter was exactly what you needed? Because I know if I go get, like, brain surgery, I don't want my brain surgeon to kind of, I'm going to wing your plan. I don't want to cookie cutter this thing. I'm going to come up with a unique surgery for you. Like, no, I need you to do the surgery you've done 50 times, please. I don't need you to experiment on me. And so having somebody that's a subject matter expert of whatever your subject matter is, leadership skills, and kind of leadership is seeing things that other people don't see. And so maybe that's the tax planning. Like, hey, great news, you're in a low tax bracket today. I hate to tell you, but 20 years from now, you're going to get in a nasty tax bracket. So let's fix that. So, like, seeing more than other people see and seeing it sooner than other people see it. The shared values, that's always helpful. And then, you know, at least in our world, somebody that does tax planning, because not everybody does. Some people say, well, that's the accountant's job. You need to talk to the accountant. I don't do that. I mean, maybe that's allowable, but that's, in my opinion, not what you want.
And at the risk of putting words in your mouth, even that cookie cutter, that's the foundation, but, you know, you can still
right, yeah,
do things in different areas if it's necessary.
It's,
it just gives you a place to start.
I mean, in our process, when we talk to somebody, if it kind of seems like it might be a good fit, if we talk to somebody that just, like, doesn't have very much money, they're probably not going to have the tax problem, because the tax problem happens because you have a bunch of money and it accumulates and, like, ooh, now we got a problem. And so, you know, finding the right person of, you know, in our case, you're a federal employee. We know the problems you're going to have are not the same problems of everybody else, because you've got a guaranteed, you know, $4,000 a month coming in. that's different than some people. You've got a different set of problems. And we run them through the, we need to make sure you and your spouse are going to live to your 90s and have enough. We'll do that for everybody. We need to make sure if one spouse dies, the other one's okay. We're going to do that for everybody. And then we're going to look at tax planning of if you do nothing, what does it look like? If we plan ahead, what does it look like? The answers will be slightly different for everybody, but everybody kind of runs through that process because it works. It's a process of success.
Okay, so boomers, if they're listening and they haven't really sat down with someone, they should do it ASAP. What age do you recommend? Like, I mean, my kids are in their 30s. What age do you recommend that people sit down and really look at the long term?
I mean, the earlier the better. Some financial planners out there, you know, have different, I guess, niches or niches, depending on how you pronounce it. And some people, that is their niche. We work with younger people, help get stuff going. I mean, ours happens to be, you know, the 55 and up, like real close to retirement kind of thing. But, I mean, yes, there are things you can do early, like saving your money through the work program. You can do the, like, I'm going to pay taxes later or I'm going to pay taxes now. You get to decide that. And, you know, 20 years from now, it will make a difference. And so working with somebody to at least talk through that, you know, can be helpful. Just the compounding interest in saving a little bit more. Like, can we lower your lifestyle just a little bit now to save more for later? You know, talking people through that can be helpful. So I think there are people that do that. That happens to not be our niche, but yes, I mean, the earlier, the better. For sure.
Okay, so probably the minute you've got anything that looks like a long-term job or career, it would be a good time to go talk to somebody.
Yeah, that's what I mean, like new job, you sign all those papers that nobody's paying attention to. And at least in our world with the federal government, you sign up in your 20s, you sign up for all the life insurance stuff, and everything's cheap. And then you get like your, you know, we'll look at somebody's pay stub that's 55 years old and like, you know, you're paying $500 a month for life insurance? Nope, didn't know that. Well, you are. And maybe you might could get some life insurance on the outside from a company way cheaper. And just looking over somebody's pay stub to see like, what are you paying for that you just have not been paying attention to could be helpful for anybody.
I wanted to ask about life insurance. I just want to put a little slip in here that I've been trying for almost 40 minutes here to talk American, but I want to take credit for that niche that you just slipped in there. So folks, he just spoke Canadian. He just spoke Canadian for one word. There we go. Thank you. Okay. You keep on mentioning life insurance for an older person. Isn't that a little cost prohibitive?
It depends on health and age and what you're trying to accomplish. It's a tool in the tool belt. I've heard people say like, oh, with life insurance, you can buy dollars with pennies. Okay, so you're a little older. We might can buy dollars with dimes or maybe dollars with quarters or, you know, but it's still the idea of life insurance is something, hopefully, in theory, it's going to pay out more than you put in. So the numbers might be like what you would think would be expensive, but I mean, in the example I mentioned earlier where we had somebody got plenty of money, they still bought life insurance. Their investments are growing so much that like, you know, hey, last year you made $80,000. What do you want to do with it? I don't know. Do you want to leave more money to your kids? Yeah, sounds great. Well, what if we took a portion of that money every year and paid for life insurance with it? Like, so it's not coming out of your monthly budget. Let's just the earnings for the account that you don't know what you're going to do with it. And we were able to get, I mean, I think it was probably 65 years old. They got $750,000 of permanent life insurance that lasts forever. So no matter when they die, it'll pay. And they were paying it once a year, taking out earnings from their accounts that they didn't know what to do with it anyway. And so now they've got $750,000 of long-term care available if needed. And their kids will get $750,000 of tax-free money when they die. And it's paid for by the growth of their other account. So it's not really affecting their like monthly budget. And they really didn't know what to do with it anyway. It's just sitting in an account. And so that's a case where they don't need the life insurance, but they want it for what it does. And, you know, it made sense in their situation.
I think when I edit our conversation before it goes live, I'm going to get a little bell. And every time you give one of those amazing nuggets, I'm just going to go ding.
Let's go.
Oh, if you could see him, folks, he can dance too.
Oh, I will make a fool of myself in a heartbeat. I am on my best behavior.
Not on this podcast. Okay, this is another question that comes out from left field, and there's a possibility you cannot, will not answer it. I know in Canada there's a lot of speculation that the federal government pension fund is not going to last a lot more years. I've heard the same in the States. Do you have thoughts
Yes.
around that, or is that just so out there that who knows?
Well, I mean, when you go on the Social Security website, that's our older age pension kind of
Old
thing.
age, old age, yeah, pension, yeah.
I mean, I think it's like the OAID. I mean, it's like old age was in the title, but I think it says there's like enough money in the trust fund to last till 2034. And beyond that, there's only going to be like 75% of the payout ratio. And so, like, something needs to be done. There's a David Walker, I think back in 2008, was the Comptroller General, kind of the accountant of the government. And he said it's just a four letter word. It's math. We have a math problem. And, something has to change or else we got a problem. But if you're a politician and you bring up, let's make a change, you are not getting elected. And so I don't know. I think back in the day, it was Paul Ryan. I think mentioned something, and they had like advertisements of him like pushing an old lady in a wheelchair like off a cliff. I mean, that was the advertisement because he said maybe we should change how this works. And so something's got to change. I think 2034 is the date. It seems to be the American way to wait to the last minute and then get something done. So we still got time. We got plenty of time.
And I think, given that sort of thing, is younger people in, and I'm gonna go on my soapbox here, but
Go
instead
for
of screaming and yelling about boomers and depleting the fund, then, as you say, it's math. If there's fewer people paying in, then go see Mel today at age 35, 40, and make sure that you have got contingency plans or something in line so that you can live as comfortably as the boomers that you're complaining about. And it doesn't matter as much. You're not as dependent on the federal
Yes.
pension.
I don't say most younger people. I think a lot of younger people probably already know, like, yeah, I'm not counting on that. So you better be planning for yourself. I mean, the problem with that, I think George Bush back in the day, George W. Bush was trying to like privatize it to where, like, instead of us holding the money and we'll pay you later, how about we give it to you and you do what you want to do with it? And that didn't go well. But if you are responsible, I think you can plan and you can have enough. If you're not responsible, that's the problem is, retirement will sneak up on you and you won't be ready.
Well, and the reason it's one of my, besides ageism is a soapbox, but this whole pension thing is I have seen my peers retire and they're going like, wait a minute, I thought my federal pension would pay for, I've paid and the other, my employment, I've paid into it all these years and I'm only making this much. They just don't have a clue and then they're panicking. And I, like that needs to stop. You need to know what's coming and whether you can live on it. And if you can't live on it, how to make adjustments.
Well, back before COVID, we would go into federal locations and teach about their system, like into the buildings, air traffic control. None of the young people would show up. And I mean, it didn't hurt our feelings too much because, I mean, we're trying to educate the people closer to retirement. Like, that's better for us. But we would educate whoever's there. They just wouldn't show up. And the older people there would say, these younger people really should show up. I know, but they don't. They don't show up. It's not important to them.
Well, this is year six of this podcast, and on numerous occasions, I have had people in, or I've had guests who talk about stuff that is maybe we're past that now, but my comment is always make sure your kids do whatever needs to be done, or go talk to your kids about how important this is. So I'm just going to put that out again
Yeah.
now.
And some of the, you know, we do federal stuff, but we also do kind of what the Bible says about money. And one of there is make sure you pass on wisdom before you pass on money. Like making sure the next steward is ready. And some of that is you need to pass on wisdom. And so there should be family meetings of, you know, I don't like you, in my opinion, kids should not inherit money just out of the blue, not know, like, I don't know what I'm getting. Y'all need to have a family meeting. This is how much we have. This is our wishes. We would like these things to happen. It, like, there's going to be a family meeting after you die. Like, do you want to be there? Let's have the family meeting before you die so everybody can be on the same page and pass along some of your wishes and that type of stuff beforehand. That's better, in my opinion.
Right. Okay, we've sort of been all over the map here. A little bit of positive news, a little bit of drama, shall we say. Give us something that everybody can look forward to from age 70 down to age 40.
Retirement can be great if, you know, if planned well. I'm starting to get on a little diet kick or the whatever, more protein, less carbs. I heard a podcast where it said longevity is about, I think, muscle mass. Like the more muscle you have, you last longer. And so making sure, like, retiring to the couch is not a retiring you should be focusing on. Find something that you want to do in retirement. Start doing it while you're still working. Because usually the beginning of doing anything, you kind of stink at it or it's not fun. And so get through the rough stage while you're still successful at work. And so when you do retire, you're already kind of in the swing of whatever it is you want to be doing in retirement. And hopefully you've got enough money that you can go do what you want to do regardless of money. If it's teaching smaller kids how to read, if it's going on mission trip, whatever you deem to be significant, get excited and do that. It just might start doing it now. Make sure you like it. Make sure it's what you want it to be. Because it can be great if you do it well. If you're not yet retired, I had a job way back when building golf clubs, and I like golf clubs, but it was still, you know, you're clocking in over the summer building golf clubs. And I would kept saying, I can't wait for this to be over. Like, I can't wait till Friday. I can't wait till Friday. And there was an older guy there that says, you're going to wish your life away. You keep going, I wish it was Friday. I wish you're wishing your life away. You need to find a way to enjoy every day. So that finding the right job that you get to do the things that you enjoy doing, that it's like not work, it's fun. You need to find that kind of job that lines up with the skills you have where it's just fun. That would be my advice for the younger folks, for sure.
Well, I'm just going to add in there, too, that if it's not fun, then make it so. you bring the joy.
There you go. That's why you can dance on a podcast.
That's right. You can dance on a podcast. What haven't I asked you that you would like American federal employees to think about, remember, consider, or something?
Yeah, that most of the problems we are solving, and even if they're not a federal employee, usually people seeking out our help, they have money. And so most of the problems you're trying to fix are first world problems. You know, like, hey, great news, you have enough. Yeah, you're going to be taxed extra, but you have enough. Yes, we can work on that problem. It's a problem. Let's fix it. But, like, you still are very fortunate. You have enough. The problems you're facing, lots of people are facing lots of worse problems than what you're facing. And so we can definitely focus on fixing them, but let's not over-dramatize some of the problems because there's lots of people worse off than what you're going through.
Yeah. That's definitely one of my mantras. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Yeah, so ChristyCapital.com is our website. We've got a YouTube channel, or if you go to YouTube, you can search for Christy Capital Management. We're putting out 2 videos a week on federal stuff, retirement, tax planning, that kind of stuff. We just wrote a new book, Your First Federal Retirement, The 10 Decisions That Could Make or Break Your Retirement. It is coming out. It's actually already on Amazon. I think by this time this shows up, it will already be there. If you know of somebody that lots of the books are, you know, super detailed in how you figure out the math of certain things, where this is more about the decision. Like, let's think about the different things that go into this decision. Like, you got to make your own decision, but this is what you should think about around this decision. It's more of that type of a book. But that is on Amazon if you deem it necessary to go get it.
Okay. You've got quite a few resources on your website too.
Yes. So a lot of the, you know, videos we make, they take the script and write a blog. The blog goes on the website. There's a FERS calculator. That's Federal Employee Retirement System calculator. So if you need help figuring out how much might I get, there's a calculator. You can go there. I mean, we have a Facebook page, but there's not a ton of people following that yet. But yes, there's ChristieCapital.com is where you can go find out more about us. We mainly help federal, but we can help anybody. But that's kind of the niche.
Tell us the name of your book again, because I was wondering what FERS meant. But it's
FERS is the Federal Employee Retirement System, FERS.
Okay.
All right. And that's, you know, the system they're under. And it's, as you imagine, anything probably government related is quite complicated and different rules. And whenever you get into something that complicated, then, you know, knowing the rules, you can use them to your advantage, seeking out help.
Okay.
I'm biased, but seek out help. Even if it's not from me, seek out help from somebody.
No, I agree 100%. Okay, well, there's another thought. Are you in Georgia, did I see?
So I am in South Carolina. Our home office is in Georgia. We help people, you know, if they're anywhere.
Oh, okay, because that was where I was going with that, is can you help across state borders?
Yes. I think most stuff we can do everywhere. I think the life insurance stuff, some states, California, New York, don't play well with others. And so certain states we can't do life insurance in. But as far as helping manage money and planning and that type of stuff, I think if you're in America, and I even think we checked some of the Virgin Islands, or if it's like a U.S. territory, we're all good.
Oh, perfect.
And I think if you're a U.S. citizen, we're good wherever you live.
Okay. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Go for it.
For heaven's sake.
Yeah. Yes.
Daddy sing bass, but Mel sing tenor?
I am the tenor. So I am in a gospel, well, Southern gospel quartet. There's four of us. Two of the guys have been doing it for 30, 40 years. I mean, I might be in year 10 or 11. I think we actually have a concert in next Monday, where we go around to, you know, the 55 and over groups at churches or whatever. They cook a good dinner. I will sing for my supper. We sing some songs. The bad thing is, so we used to be a singing group. People would introduce us as a singing group. And now it's turned into our entertainment for tonight is For Heaven's Sake. So evidently we need to bring more entertainment and less singing, as we may not be as good as we used to be. But yes.
So it's a cappella, is it?
I mean, there's some a cappella songs, but there's like backing track. I mean, there's music playing and there's four guys singing, where there's, you know, the bass, baritone, lead, and tenor. And I happen to be the tenor. But
I've been listening to Barbershop Quartet recently only because I have someone living in the same house as me, and she was coaching a barbershop quartet prior to Valentine's Day. So
now the true barbershop, really good. I mean, that's hard stuff. Our stuff is more easy.
Your secret is safe with us. Now, you're not on YouTube? I went looking for heaven's sake, and I came up with a women's group.
Oh, no, we're not that good. We're okay. We're like, you know, local church level. Like, if you're in a bind and need somebody, we're that good. But no, we are not. We are not on YouTube. I do play keyboard in the band at my church. And we kind of got a, you know, big church, 2,000 people show up on Sunday mornings with a couple of services. And like some of that stuff is on YouTube. But now the quartet, it's not on YouTube.
Okay, so I take it you're not going to sing us out.
Oh man.
No, I'm not that. I'm good. It's
I got
okay.
So you can't see it, but right behind me, a nice piece of furniture. You take that drawer off, and there's a piano in there. You pull it out, there's a keyboard in there to play.
Oh, nice. Good fun. Okay, so your financial planner / advisor / advisor has a secret life and is happy to share it with you.
There you go.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So your website link is in the show notes, and all of the links, book, everything, resource page, will be on your page at our website.
Awesome. And if somebody's listening, they know somebody that is a Fed, like, tell them. It might not be a book for you, but if you know somebody that's struggling during this time, let them know about it.
So I usually tell them who to share the episode with. I think you just did that.
Oh, I am so sorry.
No. Listeners, where are you on this federal employee / retirement spectrum? Please talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. You know, I always say if there was a question I didn't ask my guest, to ask it in the show or in the notes or in the comments, and I'll get you an answer. But this time, I think maybe the best idea here is to click the link to Mel's website and follow up there. It's way over my head. Share this episode, like Mel just said. Now, I opened by saying it's a crazy world and job security is tenuous. Your friends need this information, all of Mel's thoughts as well. So yes, share it with anybody that's that age by the sounds of it, but especially federal employees. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button and help us grow. I'm registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. And a reminder that next week we are focusing on similar subjects through a Canadian lens. Mel Stubbs, thank you for being my guest and being candid about the state of things right now. I hope I didn't pull you into too many political places. But let's hope that calm heads prevail and uncertainty fades.
Awesome.
Have a great rest of the week.